I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, welcome back to Brett and Cliff's Flea Circus. My name is Cliff.
And my name is Brett.
Yes.
Yes, just me this week again.
We were like Hall and Oates there.
Which one are you?
Hall, obviously.
Are you? Why? Any particular reason? Is he your favourite? I take it he is.
He's my favourite, but your dad used to look like Oates. So
he did.
Taking that. And my middle name is named after Daryl Hall. So.
Oh, well, there you go. Paul, didn't know that.
Paul Hall Clifford.
Paul Hall Clifford. And I'm Brett Oates Davidson.
Oates. Should name. Like, if I have another child, I will name them Oates.
I was watching something on YouTube. It was like a clip of Brass Eye, that paedophile one.
Okay.
And they had a politician talking nonsense, obviously, and he had like a picture of two people, and it was Hall and Oates, and he was saying that they were paedophiles. It's mental. Trust politicians not to know where Hall and Oates are. Eh?
Not to know who Hall and Oates are, because they're good, and I'm glad they don't know who they are. But also, not to put any thought or research or due care and attention into anything that I'm talking about. This sounds like it'll look good for me, so I'll do
exactly. That's the whole plan, isn't it? That's how we get to them, isn't it?
Yeah,
this'll be good for you. Even Gary Lineker was in that one, wasn't he?
Yeah, Lineker was in that. My favourite bit is just when it's going, I'm talking nonsense. It's Phil Collins, isn't it?
Yeah. Phil Collins, yeah. I'm talking nonsense. So that's brilliant. It is. It is excellent.
What else? Been watching Out Else?
What's that?
Been watching Out Else?
No, just that Adam Curtis documentary that took us ages to watch, but I thoroughly enjoyed it.
I should watch it, but it's like sitting down to that.
It is a slog, like, but I like his stuff. There's a bit with John Lennon in, which is good.
Is it?
I'll leave that for you to watch, because I was going to do an Adam Curtis quiz for later on. So might do that a little bit later, but that was good. No, not today, not a day later.
I might as well say now, I'd know nothing, so it would be terrible.
Yeah, I mean, it would just be things that you could guess at. It'll not be, you know.
Well, let's see. What have I been watching? Just Sesame Street clips over and over and over and over and over.
Does Pearl love the Sesame Streets?
No, just me, really. I'll tell a bit of a white lie there, because she doesn't love Sesame Street. She likes, she loves Elmo. As soon as anything else happens on the screen, she throws the tablet across the other side of the room.
Did she? In disgust.
You know, like, I remember watching it when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, the obviously Oscar the Grouch and the Cookie Monster and all those guys, everyone apart from Big Bird, essentially, is great.
Yeah.
And then obviously they have the clips with the kids playing in the playground and, you know, doing the actual learning stuff. And I remember thinking, fucking hell, man, just get the puppets back on. I don't want to see these, these ghetto kids. Like, I'm not bothered. Yeah. I'm not bothered. Like, as a kid, I was just like, why do I want to watch these kids? Like, I want to watch Cookie Monster or whatever. And Pearl has adopted that from a very, very young age. It's mad.
That's good.
Now loves it. I don't know how I even stumbled across it. Like, basically, she's been just something to occupy or whatever. I must have one more and just gone, oh, I wonder what she thinks about that. And I put like an elbow thing on, and she, like I've said before, she never stops moving. She's always moving. And now she's always like babbling. Like, she'll be talking before long. So it's like just constant energy and movement and all this stuff, just totally constant. So one morning she woke up and I thought, oh, I wonder, like, I was knackered basically. So I was like, I wonder if I put something on my phone, whether she'll watch it. And for 20 minutes, she just lay with her head on my chest watching this stuff. And I was like, this is absolutely magic. Like, this is the only time she ever stood still. And I know people are like, oh, you shouldn't give your kids fucking screen.
Of course you should. That shit. Bollocks.
Do you think actual parents say that?
No. They get a bit of a break. I mean, that's what CBeebies is for, isn't it?
But also, they go to school and they're using tablets and iPads, and they'll have a phone, and it's necessary for them to have a phone because you need to keep in touch with them and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Like, if you don't have one in your house, what difference is it going to make?
The world is just, you know, it's focused on that. Everything's tablets and stuff with computers now. You kind of keep them away from it. It's impossible.
Anyway.
And it's funny you should say that anyway, because they... Lennon, when he was young, he loved Elmo as well. And we used to have a doll that was called Tickle Me Elmo.
Yeah, I've been trying to get it, but...
Have you?
I'll have to, like, get it imported or something like that. She might have gone off it by the time it gets here.
Yeah, that was great. But Sesame Street was always a strange one as a kid. I only remember watching it when you were, like, ill.
Yeah, yeah. Because it was lunchtime,
it was on later. It was why?
I'm sure it was on at, like, lunchtime on Channel 4. And I remember being off and being at my nana's house. She must have been looking after us or something. Mm-hmm. And it being on and thinking, oh, yes, I get to watch Sesame Street. Like a silly time to put a kid's TV show on.
I know.
She absolutely loves Elmo. So she likes the ones, she likes the songs. I've told you she loves music. So when the song's on, she loves it. But his little mate, Abby, comes on. Fucking furious. Absolutely furious. Like, literally anybody else on the screen other than Elmo, and she's just fucking, she's like biting the tablet, throwing it. She hates everyone else.
She's an armchair critic at this very early stage. Anyway,
seems like a little bit worrying, maybe. No, she's but she likes that, and she likes Baby Shark, which I know that's the thing, right? You know what?
Not Baby Shark.
I think it's an all right song. I don't mind it. I don't mind it.
The only time I've ever really heard it, I can't say I've sat and listened to it, it's just the kids at the school singing it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, Lennon's too old for that,
the kids would just constantly sing it. Has anything been happening on the Twitter?
I haven't really had a chance to keep up on it, really. We've had lots of messages and stuff and lots of people following us and retweeting and all that, but I haven't really had a chance to keep up this week.
I've got one for you, because you always like this to tell you when an ex-footballer follows you.
Yes.
Or us. So we've been followed by an ex-footballer by the name of Terry Eccles.
That's a lovely name.
It's a lovely name.
It sounds like he's a footballer from the fictional Weatherfield County on Coronation Street.
I think it's like before our time. I think he played for Blackburn, Huddersfield, York in like the 60s, 70s and stuff. So
did he?
Yeah, but that's what he did on Twitter. Yeah. I know why. But it's nice that Mr. Eccles has followed.
I think we've also now been followed by Alex Lowe, who is the actor who plays Clinton Baptiste and the other characters. Mm. So all the characters followed us, which I presume is him, and now the man himself has started following us. So that's nice.
Well, that's good. Yeah, it is good. And we've discovered that Space Raiders are the best 10 pence.
Yeah, Christmas. But only because you forgot to include Transformer snack.
Have you even ate them before?
Of course, I've always seen them in the tomato shop. Flavor, I think.
Are they? Oh, well, I'm a big fan of tomato crisps.
They don't transform, but just so you know.
Can you have them at Christmas?
It would make any Christmas all the better.
Tomato crisps.
Yeah.
That would be a good one. Yeah. So, yeah, they're the best crisps. And you sent me a message about Michael Owen's jeans.
Yes, have you
and
seen
them? I didn't have a clue what you were talking about.
Have you looked
about,
at them so. Since?
No, I haven't had a chance, okay. No.
Well, I'll send you a picture right now of Michael Owen's jeans. So Michael Owen has teamed up with a Thai jeans brand that I can only presume that it's pronounced McJeans.
Now, I do have a question. Are they as good as Nobby's? We're going to mention Nobby again. Are they as good as his orange jeans that he was lambasted for wearing one time when we went out?
These are those orange jeans, man.
he only wore them once. I think he sent them back in the catalogue after that.
Yes, he probably like scuffed them as well.
He did.
Falling over.
Straight back to the catalogue, then, mate. What's the worst pair of jeans you've ever worn? Oh. Can you get bad jeans? I've never had coloured jeans. I've had white jeans when I was dressed as Jesus.
I think that's bad, I would say.
But I was dressed as Jesus on a holiday, though. That can't be too bad.
I'm sure you used to wear them outside of that.
No, I didn't. That's the only time I've ever worn them. I think I've still got them.
Try to attach a picture here so you can see what you wear. Have I ever had coloured jeans? I think I've had green jeans.
Green jeans?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I think I had green ones.
Does Shaggy off there, Scooby? No, he has a green T-shirt, doesn't he?
Purple and jeans, I think he has, isn't he?
No, he has a green T-shirt and brown jeans.
Brown, are they? Okay.
Uh-huh. I think
where
brown's
is this picture gone? I just want to put the picture on here. So you can see it. It's a disaster, this. Anyway, Michael Owen has teamed up with... I can't do it, Brett.
Don't worry, just describe the jeans.
Well, there's nothing particularly wrong with the jeans themselves, I'm sure. They're absolutely fine. Apart
Looking
from
for
the
a
fact,
sponsorship from these this jean company now.
I've sent That's you like, a link to Sun story, so I apologise to everyone who hates the Sun, but do good headlines, don't they? So it's this Thai company called McJeans, and they're like person. It's just this picture of him being. How old is he? He's older than us, right? So he must be like 41, something like that.
Yeah, he's older than us.
Well, he just though, I think. And they're like monogrammed, so he's got 10 on the back and MC on the pocket with the. And it's also got written on legend on legend on the back. But he's just got this double denim thing on. It's just, I don't understand, Michael Owen, like why this has happened. Like the jeans company will get nothing out of Michael Owen wearing those jeans. He's not famous or cool enough to have any impact on their sales or brand awareness. And
you know this. You know this double denim business because he's in double denim in the picture.
Yeah,
that was high fashion. I mean, you were teenagers, wasn't it?
Wrong with it? I'll stand by.
I'll stand by it as well. I don't think there's anything wrong with it. Love a bit of double denim.
I mean, I'm all right.
George
Harrison's
Michael always
for it.
In double denim.
George Harrison is always in double denim, and I love that. But yeah, he's just been mocked, isn't he? Like Michael Owen, just constantly trying to be cool. Like, just give it up. You're 40, man. Just live your life.
What do you think of Michael Owen's punditry skills?
I think he's one of the worst that exists in the world.
Him and Jermaine Genius are the worst, I think.
Dead hell. Yeah, he's terrible, isn't he? You know he's what it is, right? Andy Townsend was terrible before. I mean, he's been doing it for 20 years, so he should be better at it now than he was before. But he's actually all right now, I think.
I didn't mind him.
But is he all right, or is he just next to people like Owen and Genius, who are terrible? I think he's all right now. He used to get a lot of stick, didn't he, for the Tactics truck?
Yeah. I mean, what we're going to be doing is sort of, we've been watching a lot of football, and the documentary that we're going to talk about, there's clips of obviously old football and stuff like that. And one of the clips... is a brilliant, absolutely fantastic bit of a commentary where the commentator actually predicts what's going to happen before it even happens.
Okay.
And they don't do that anymore. The commentators are rubbish these days, I think. We need John Motson back.
I think John Motson and the twilight of his career was so bad. He was like, he sounded senile.
I like John Motson. It was Brian Moore who was doing the commentary on a certain
game. Is it in this documentary?
It is in the documentary, yeah.
Well, let's see what it is. I've just invited Danny to join us. So we've got a guest coming on again. Just gives us a bit of a break, doesn't it?
Does. So, let somebody else gas.
Danny Murray, Burnley Danny, now lives in Prague. He is a football coach himself. Me and Danny used to be in a band together ages ago when we were like 22 or something like that. Very good guitarist. We used to be thick as thieves and then haven't seen
him. I was unaware of his guitar skills.
Yes, very good. But I haven't seen him for a long time. And he's about to join us. And when he joins us, we're going to be talking about, what's it called? Do I Not Like That?
It's got two names. Originally, it was called The Impossible Job. Mm-hmm. But after it was aired, I think it was on Channel 4, because I remember watching it as a kid. And it's since been changed to Do I Not Like That?
Okay. Well, he has the man himself. Danny?
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, mate. You all right?
Good to see you both. Very professional with the microphone and the view in the background. It's like, you know, studio.
Yeah.
That's not me, though.
That's like, I'm going to turn into a cat in a minute. That's not real. That's just a picture of a nice place. I'm actually in a car park. But nice to see you, Danny.
Nice to see you, too.
Yes, nice to see you.
Cheers. What have you got there? We just said you're in Prague, so tell us what you're drinking.
We have a Czech favourite, Kozel.
Oh, nice.
It's a goat, if you prefer, in English.
Is that what it means?
Yeah.
How much does that cost, Danny?
Oof, too much, maybe.
Too much?
30 pence.
This can of Filipino San Miguel probably cost me £4.
That's a disgrace, isn't it?
No, well, how much? How much would it be? 30? No, about 120 it costs.
That's not too bad,
is it?
No. Prefer the 30 pence can, so.
This is the famous Brett setup. Can't see a thing. You can see your face, so that's not so bad.
Yeah.
Well, that's it. That's all I need to see, Danny.
You probably should be wearing that stocking.
You know what? If you're in that, I was going to put it on, Danny, but I forgot all about it. I should have done that, shouldn't I? That would have been nice for you. So, yeah, what we're going to talk about today, this mental, crazy documentary called The Impossible Job or Do I Not Like That? Which was, like I say, on Channel 4, and I watched it when it first came out, but I don't think you two lads did you? So is this the first time that you've seen this, Danny?
I did see it, actually, within the last couple of years, like just random scrolling through football documentaries. I remember it when you said you were going to do it. So, yeah, it's definitely a good documentary.
Oh, it's a good one.
I hadn't seen it. I think we said before on here, like I wasn't really into football until I was about 13, 14. And this came out when I was 13, but I don't know, like I didn't see it. And also I hadn't seen any of the games. So it's about Graham Taylor's, the end of his reign as England manager, or in fact, probably all of it. So he took over after Bobby Robson, didn't he? After 1990 World Cup. We were shit in the 1992 European Championships, apparently. I haven't seen it.
Terrible.
And then we were trying to qualify for the USA 94 World Cup, which you would have thought was a foregone conclusion. And this was probably the first fly on the wall, certainly for an England manager to have a fly on the wall documentary done while they're trying to qualify. And I think a little bit like that Sunderland documentary that everybody watchers on Netflix, Sunderland Until I Die, the idea was like Sunderland were going to get promoted after they got relegated from the Premier League.
Yeah.
No.
It didn't quite happen like that. And I think this was going to be, let's follow England and see what it's like qualifying for a World Cup. And it certainly didn't go to plan, did it?
I think that was the plan, wasn't it? That was definitely the plan. We're just going to qualify, especially if you look at the group that way. I mean, Holland were decent. I mean, they had a pretty good side at the time, didn't they? But Norway? Do you know what I mean? Norway, yeah. Turkey, San Marino,
Poland. Should
have qualified from this group. Yeah, Poland.
I think that's like most competitions, right? It's like most competitions England go into. You look at the group and you think, oh, piece of piss, it's easy. And it's,
yeah,
I think that's a bit, it's far too arrogant, really, to
it is.
Assume that it's going to be so easy. And it's not going to be that easy when you've got Colton Palmer in your midfield.
Colton Palmer, yeah. I mean, we should have qualified, though. That's the thing, shouldn't we? If you look back at those teams and stuff like that, we should have done.
I remember lots of things went against it. Like I say, I didn't watch any of these games, but I remember whether I remember it or whether I just know it because it's famous, the Ronald Koeman free kick and the commentary around that, which is what you were mentioning before, Brett. I mean, it's superb commentary, a superb free kick, but by all accounts, he shouldn't have been on the pitch.
And there was it, you know, it was a retake as well.
Yeah.
You know, fight encroaching. And the same thing happened at the sort of incident when Platt was through and Ronald Koeman sort of dragged him down. He should have been sent off.
Yeah.
And we then had a free kick, which Tony DiRigo, the great Tony DiRigo, took.
What a haircut. An absolute quality haircut.
When you look back, there's some very strange players in the squad, though, isn't there?
Well, this is
some
the
very
thing.
Odd ones.
Like, should we really have qualified? If you look in theory, yes, but the squad, whether it's due to bad injuries and suspensions and bad luck, the squad has got about six great players in. And the rest, if they're the best that you can get, fucking hell. No wonder we didn't qualify. Or is it selection? I mean, this is the thing that this is what obviously was Taylor's undoing as you go through the documentary. But so at the time it came out, and I remember a big furore around it because it basically made Graham Taylor an absolute laughing stock. And he was already like public enemy number one because we didn't get into the World Cup.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing is that we had a disastrous Euros because I remember all of it. I was after the World Cup in 1990. I think that was the first one sort of competition that I can really remember, and I loved it. So I watched every single England game sort of up until this point. So I remember everything, and I remember watching when the Euros and were absolutely crap. He got lambasted for taking Lineker off, I think.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
And he brought on Alan Smith. So I watched all of those games and I watched this documentary at the time. And I was a big one for, you know, getting him out because I thought it was awful. Did you watch all those games and stuff, Danny?
I do remember 1990. I remember watching the Cameroon game in parents' bedroom and then... Unfortunately, in the semi-final, I had to sneak downstairs and, like, sit on the bottom step. Like,
yeah.
I should have been in bed, and my dad was like, wouldn't let me watch it. I was, like, watching through the glass of the door. And, like,
yeah.
But 1992, I don't remember it as much. But I do for sure remember a few of these games, and in particular the second Holland or Netherlands game.
Yeah.
I watched that at my grandma's, and I was allowed to stay up again and watch it. But yeah, I remember Koeman, shocking, should have been sent off. And it was very disjointed. Like the team, like you said, you had six or seven good players and then random, you know, I think it's more of a transitional team going into like probably future tournaments. Like Alan Shearer just came in and, you know,
a lot of the players as well from that 1990 squad, the likes of Waddle and Beardsley. I don't understand why Beardsley's not involved in the squad because He was still playing for
Newcastle
and ripping things
for
up,
Newcastle,
wasn't he?
He was great.
I saw
the little shimmying.
Yeah, there must have been some kind of fallout or something with Beardsley because he's not in at all, is he? But I mean, the likes of Lineker retired and stuff after the Euros and Butcher, people like that. But I don't think
those
Wattler
guys should have, right? The Butcher, we don't need those at that point. They would have been too old.
I think Des Walker for definite should have retired at that point because there's some shocking passes.
But he would have been at peak in theory. And, you know, everybody in thought theory. Des Walker was a really this calm, like, cultured, really pacey centre-half. I remember that.
Quick, yeah.
But it's the same as this documentary goes on and England aren't doing very well.
Mm-hmm.
Same things crop up is Carlton Palmer's playing. And you're not really, most of the time, you're not watching the action on the pitch. You're watching the guys on the touchline.
Taylor
and his backroom staff. We'll talk about them as well. But if you just listen to all the time, he's going, Carlton, fucking hell, Carlton. Yeah. Where's Carlton there? Why do you keep picking him?
He's all over the shop, isn't he? He's just going where he wants. I think he scores. I forgot who he scores against. He's like, what is he doing over there?
San Marino, I think.
It's like, eh?
Yeah.
And even against Holland, second game, he's playing him right wing.
Yeah, that's terrible.
What are you doing? Don't play him. Just bench him.
But that's the thing I got from watching it is, I mean, initially when I watched it as a kid, I couldn't stand Graeme Taylor because we didn't qualify and I was devastated. But watching it back, I feel sorry for him.
Absolutely.
I feel sorry. I mean, these quite possibly could have been the decisions that he made, but the people that he's got sitting on the bench with him, Phil Neal and Laurie McNamee, are just awful.
I wanted to say this. This is quality, though. When I think it's the Poland game, and they're sat, and it's weird. It's like a sketch show. They're like sat on the bench, and you can like hear the fans, but it's just weird. They sat like at a bus stop or something.
It's so weird.
And Laurie McGonaghy's in like there in the tracks of Laurie McGonaghy's in a suit, and like he's this big old man.
With the England badge emblazoned on it.
He doesn't look like he's come from the club or he's going to the club after. But one thing that stuck out with me when it kind of starts and it says these backroom staff who he inherited and have been there. That's weird, isn't it? That these guys were just England's coaches and he had no say in it. Like that wouldn't happen now.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? It's like between club level because the everybody hopeless. You know. everybody is around you. You can't really pick your kind of backroom team, and I think it's like to persuade people. Eventually, like to take his own staff, but it's very alien. I guess if you're only playing like random 10 games, and then your club, you're playing 50, 60 games, then
it's weird. I think but it still lingers on today. I think a bit with the FA and the way the FA. Manage things like Eddie Boothroyd is under 21's coach, etc. And you know, all of these guys who are the England women's coach and the under 21's, under 17's, in under 19's coaches and stuff. Why is Eddie Boothroyd in that job? Like, he failed as a manager at every level of the game, but he's responsible for bringing through the youth of England who are infinitely more talented than he ever was, work with managers like Mourinho, Tuchel, whoever, you know, like the standard that they must get at their clubs and then come into the England setup is insane. And the difference between that and working with those guys must be mad.
The thing is, there's a fascinating bit where Graeme Taylor's under massive pressure and he has no support from anybody. He has no support from his backroom staff. And then he goes into an FA meeting and he's speaking to them all. And he wants to talk about the game and how things are going.
It's absolutely
obviously they're
brutal,
not going
that.
Well.
Yeah,
it's really bad. And the first thing that one of them brings up is, well, Mr. Gascoigne's behaviour on the pitch isn't what we expect, is it? I mean, that's what they're bothered about, isn't it? The way that they appear to the outside world.
It's not the 1930s, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, And there's a guy, I can't remember his name, but he's head of coaching, and obviously this is your area,
Charles or something, isn't it,
Danny? I can't remember his name now, but he says, "Well, I've been here for 30 years.
Yeah,
you know, I'm coming to me 30 year at the end of this year. I mean, 30 years. He's been doing that job for 30 years. How can anything move on and grow? And also, if he's been doing it
very for 30 stale, years. Right? If you've been there 30 years, it's very stale and kind of stayed, and everybody wants.
Yeah, mad this is. 30 years is 1962." To 1992,
uh-huh.
Like, I know. Imagine the difference between what was happening in 1962 to then. It's crazy. Like, even uh-huh. just in society and like trends and fashion and music and all of that kind of stuff mm-hmm. is crazy. But in football, the difference is insane in 30 years.
Like, of course it is.
How is he still there? It's still the same. Like. All, you know, I just remember, you know, Bert Milicic cropping up to do the FA Cup. You think, who are these old guys? Like, of course, but they're still hopeless now. They're still hopeless mm-hmm. now. Like, the people in charge of shit. Like, it never gets any better. It's an outdated old fuckers, like, old boys club, isn't it, really?
That's exactly what it is, yeah. And the other thing I wanted to ask you about, Danny, is there's a lot of Graham Taylor on the training field and stuff like that, isn't there? But... Mm-hmm. The thing is, there's a bit where they're all at Wembley and they're just crossing balls in, but there's no defenders there at all. They're just crossing them. Did you see that? I mean, if you've got these international players, you want them to be competitive, don't you? You don't want them just, you know, heading free crosses in or whatever. Well, what did you think about the training?
It's going to be challenging, right? Well, the training is going to be challenging. Like, it doesn't matter what age you are, whether you're a kid or even our age, but...
Yeah.
It's like they're not doing enough. They're clearly not. He's clearly not doing enough. He's like got the words, he's got, you know, the bit of the banter and the, you know, try and back it up, but
yeah.
It's very staid again. It's very mm-hmm. it's not challenging.
I thought it was weird. Yeah. I thought that bit was weird because I mean in theory that winger should be able to cross the ball in for a striker. Every single time without any, and but he keeps going, just put it in, they'll get there. Like, he doesn't even demand it to be accurate. It's crazy.
I know it is,
but he's like praising them all, good lad. Yeah. Like, they just smashed in an empty net or whatever. And you're like,
yeah, I mean, it's just insane. I mean, the other thing is that his tactics that he keeps going on about, I mean, he's constantly talking about free kicks and corners,
yeah.
And we've got the restart. We've got the best midfielder in Paul Gascoigne in the world at that time. I know he's had a couple of injuries and stuff, but still he was fantastic, Gazza. And he must have just been watching long balls going over his head constantly. Wouldn't
it's like English football for decades, isn't it? Like, yeah. Up until now, maybe.
Yeah.
Not Burnley. Sorry, we played the long ball.
You're still doing it, Danny.
You know, sometimes. But yeah, Gazza especially, you know, he had a tough time. Then he moved to Lazio, and I guess, I don't know, his head's all over the shop as well.
That was, it was quite difficult, that Gazza stuff, and especially knowing what you know about him now, and we've talked about Gazza quite a lot on the podcast, and... I have mixed feelings about him and views on him. I think he's the best English midfielder we've had. I think he's the most talented player England have ever had in midfield, for sure. But it's tough, and they're saying, well, he's gone abroad, hasn't he? So he's gone abroad. He's probably not in the best frame of mind. And they're like doing him down because he's just because
he's gone abroad.
They're not really giving him a chance. But it's weird that. Obviously, he's not playing very well, but he's the best player in the world, best player for England, for sure. So Taylor is desperate. He can't drop him because even 5 minutes of magic in a game, he's going to turn the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He can't drop him, but he's really not playing very well. And Taylor's desperate to have him in there. He can't... I mean, what was the alternative if Carlton Palmer's... Also, Gazza and Palmer in midfield... Jesus Christ.
What's that banter about, by the way?
jokey bit when they're having that little banter between them, which was really weird.
It's shocking.
Again,
it's
especially
terrible.
Considering
it's really weird and terrible.
It's terrible, especially considering how much Gazza cries about not being in football, like subsequently, you know what I mean? And they're doing this pretend bit between Carlton Palmer as the manager going, you're not playing because you're fat and you're injured and you don't even know what you're doing, you're all over the place. And he's like pretending to cry, going, come on, Gaffer, just give us another game. You're like, probably, I think Gazza was taking that seriously because it was one of those things.
Probably. He's trying to laugh it off, right?
Yeah.
There's another bit in it where he comes off the pitch and they like give him a can. Like, what would they drink?
Yeah.
I wanted to know. It's really weird. Like, is it Lucas Ed Sport? Is it beer? Like, what are they drinking? Just have a can. He's like,
I mean, they're all drinking that stuff, whatever it is. I've got no idea what it is, but it can't be good for them. And they're constantly drinking it, aren't they?
Yeah. It must be sponsored. It's probably fizzy, right? So, do you want some water?
No, but there's none of that, is there? There's none of that. I mean,
think
it shows.
That's why
it shows
I think it's difficult.
It shows how amateur they are as well. Yeah. I think it's the Poland game where the goal and the grass isn't cut and stuff like that.
Do you know that bit, on purpose?
Is it that bit?
Yeah. You've got to be on purpose, right?
Is it that bit where they're in the like underground bunker? Like having the little talk.
That's because it's raining.
There's about 20 of them.
Raining,
20 of them huddled into this underground bus stop while he gives a terrible team talk.
The whole
like sardines.
Yeah.
And there's a bit. I don't know which bit it is where there's like a press conference and they've got like beers, like pints, on the table as well. He's got like some soft drink with a straw, and he's like,
they've got McDonald's and beers.
I think that's the thing. It, you know, when Roy Keane walked out of the 1998 World Cup. I mean, that's 1998 for Ireland. Everything had moved on by then, but I'm pretty sure that this 1992, 1993 England squad was operating at the same level as that.
It's definitely
so amateurish, and I think it's the FA's amateurish or past its sell-by date or behind the times. Graham Taylor. Everybody in football thinks he's a good bloke. Everybody respects him for his club work. And he still, after this, ended up doing well with Watford. He went back to Villa. He was all right. But he really ended up a laughing stock because of this. And as much as he does seem like a good bloke, and I kind of respect him for his, like, how he kind of sticks up for himself and all that. And he took it on the chin. He didn't start shouting at people, really. He didn't lose his shit or start being mean to people. I respect him for that. I'm still not convinced he was ever going to be the right man for this job or to take England to anywhere near glory. So as much as I think there's like stuff against him with injuries and all of that kind of stuff, I don't think he was good enough either. Like, I think it's a bit of both.
He's a fantastic club manager because he got Watford, you know, almost championship manager.
Yeah,
like,
from Lincoln,
like the fourth division.
Yeah, from Lincoln.
You know,
Watford.
second in what is the Premier League now, but he's completely out of his depth here. But he doesn't have any support as well as
that. He doesn't,
and that's another thing.
But he doesn't. But he doesn't give the impression from this. I was thinking, how has he ever been any good at club level? Because the stuff he's saying, like you say, the tactics and just his kind of his manner and his weird way with words, like, do I not like that? And can we not knock it? And all that kind of stuff.
He keeps going, every 5 minutes. Yeah. What are you asking? Are you asking Laurie who's down the club in a minute? Or are you asking Phil Neal?
Phil Neal who just repeats. Like, he just repeats the same thing back to
him. It's mental. It just says the same, and they all stand up at once, and they're like shouting the same thing.
Yeah.
And then as soon as it's comedy, I noticed this as well, where like you fold his arms, and then he folds his arms.
Yeah.
And you're like, there's no individuality. It's.
Have you ever seen the film Mike Bassett's England Manager?
It's got to be
based on this, hasn't it? Because that is just what it is. It's Mike Bassett's England
Manager.
I've not
watched it for years, but I've seen bits recently because of watching this. But absolutely. Uh-huh. Yeah, it's got to be.
It's the same thing, isn't it? It's definitely the same thing. I know we're talking about Gascoigne there. Gascoigne's got the best bit in the whole thing. I think we're playing against San Marino and it's half time and he walks off and he shouts, "The ball's shit." I mean, the ball's shit. Did not hear that. Blaming the ball.
I felt sorry for Gazza in this because any chance of England's success rests on Gazza being any good. And he's too fragile a character to be able to carry the weight of that. And he's obviously not in the best shape, not in the best frame of mind. And I felt like this was probably the start of unraveling and
shame that it is a real shame, like how he's ended up. And I think the transition between like 1990 World Cup, obviously the tears and amazing tournament he had, and then obviously you'd hope USA 94, like that might be they can better what they did.
Yeah,
obviously it all went to shit in this last in the last years between that, but that probably would have been the tournament for him, like on a world stage, to be like not famous but like people know of him for like the right reasons, the good things that he did and like how talented he was. And then obviously, Euro 96, and then 98. Did he get picked?
He didn't get picked.
He smashed up up Glenn Hoddle's.
That's right. He did. But you're right. It's interesting that because this would have been, you would think, you know, his World Cup.
Yeah, because he's reaching his peak at this point. What are you, 28 maybe? Is it this one? 26?
Yeah.
Younger than that. A lot younger than that. Yeah, maybe it's 26, I think. I think it might have been 26.
Which is mad if you think about it.
Like, the thing with the injuries and stuff is, especially in that first Holland game, where that lad elbows him and does him. I mean, he knows what he's doing.
Is that Frank de Boer or Ronald de Boer? Is it one of them?
Is it? I thought it was Jan Wouters.
I think it might have been Jan Wouters. It might have been, but he's done that deliberately, hasn't he? He's gone to do him, hasn't he?
100%. He's jumped up and elbowed him in the face, like to hurt him. Like, there's no doubt about it. The other bit of this is the thing. You do feel a bit sorry for him because the team play really shit. they are shit. There's no two ways about it. The clips of the games that you watch, they're awful. Uh-huh. That Norway team, he's going, "That Norway guy's a proper diver, isn't he?" And then he dives again and they get the free kick. And then he just like, they take the free
quick
kick. The England team are just like, he's the wrong side of him. He's facing the wrong direction. He's off asleep.
He doesn't care.
Yeah.
Who was the number 9? Is it Jan Åge Fjørtoft?
I thought it was him, but it might have been him.
It looked like I'm not sure. I thought it wouldn't have been him. But it did look like him.
I thought it was a bit later on, maybe.
I thought that. I wasn't sure, but it did look a bit like him. Didn't know who.
But you think about the team. Like, you've got Ince, you've got Gazza, you've got, you know, kind of Pierce. Like, people kind of nitty gritty. Like, when I get stuck in, just doesn't. Don't do anything.
I mean, I think watching it, Des Walker should have been dropped, but I don't know who else was in the squad. Carlton Palmer,
Andy Sinton, and his haircut.
Andy Sinton, Tony DiRigo, down that left side. I mean, come on.
Lee Sharp
wasn't playing. Andy Sinton's in the team. Tony DiRigo's playing a left back. Where's Stuart Pearce at that point?
I think he got injured.
Pearce and Shearer got injured, I think.
I think if Shearer had been fit, it would have been a different story because, you know, and even he's going, we've got Sheringham coming in place of Ferdinand, and you're thinking both of those and Shearer are about 2 years away from that peak, really. So they would have been kind of young and a little bit raw at that point. Sheringham a little bit older, I guess. But you think that's it. Well, they've got these players that weren't quite there yet. By the time the World Cup come around, they probably, like you say, with Gazza, they would have been like, wow. If the full strength team in 94 would have been a totally different matter to this half strength team in the qualifiers, I think, which is, if you want to play like the what ifs,
It probably would have been a completely different team. Obviously, you would have Gazza in these kind of midfielders and then Shearer.
Yeah.
I was saying to Brett earlier on, they keep mentioning Batty. Where the fuck's David Batty? They keep saying, oh, we can, if we move Carlton there, we can bring Batty into defensive midfield. And I'm thinking, where is he playing now? If he's not in defensive midfield, he's the most, there's never been a person that I can't imagine could ever play in any other position than defensive midfield more than David Batty.
Exactly.
Do you know anything about David Batty? Do you know anything about him?
Well,
he's apparently a nutcase, isn't he? And nobody can find him.
He turned his back on football and he rides super bikes, apparently, and that's it.
Yeah.
I read something recently about funny stories about footballers. Some guy saw him in W.H. Smith's. Did I send you that or did you send me that?
I don't think
where
so.
He's like making notes out of a book. He's like gone and... He's like on his knees, like got a book off the shelf. He's like making notes on his own, like notepad. He doesn't buy the book.
He doesn't need to buy it.
Apparently, he was spotted doing that. It's a bit odd.
There was a story when he was training at Blackburn, and there was building work going on around Ewood Park, and there was this news that they had found like skeletons and dead bodies and stuff while they had been doing the building work. And this news like was around the training ground while he was training, and they were telling us the Batty or whatever. And then they looked, and he had just disappeared from training because he wanted to go and watch the dead bodies. He's apparently a complete recluse in that. Nobody knows where he is.
Yeah, I think he just wasn't bothered about it, I think.
I think we should talk about the Holland game. I think there's one more
like thing about the documentary is the press, I think.
Well, that's like, who's ramping everything up, aren't
they? The press have got it in for them. They've already turned them into a turnip after they got knocked out with 1992. Like, there's no coming back from that, is there? Like, from like no, the next year, so. You've got to go again, and the press have already called you turnip head and like they've had it in for you. Like, there's no coming back from it. It's
the
a great
turnip heat.
Oh yeah, turnip heat. It shines a light on how the tabloid sports press really influences people's opinion and public opinion and adds pressure to the manager, doesn't it? It's insane.
It's
like,
never going to change, is it? It's never going to change at all.
No, I mean, I know I'm semi-part of that world, not so much anymore, but these guys, Brian Woolnough first off, appeared early on in the documentary. Yeah.
Rob Shepherd,
who he just... that's a very awkward bit.
It's an odd bit, isn't
very
it?
Very awkward.
He's originally angry in that because he's in a press conference and he's talking to all the press and the pressure's completely on and he's kind of... talking to all the, and he's saying, don't shake your head, all of them, all the time. And then,
fair play.
Yeah. I mean, he's sticking up for himself, isn't he? But then he sort of has this to and through Rob Shepherd and stuff like that. And it's like uncomfortable, isn't it? It's just really.
It's comedy,
weird.
Though. And he's like, come on, Rob.
It is funny.
Put a smile on your face. Yeah. Like, just, it's fair enough because I guess, like, you're going to get all kinds of questions. And, like, I think I saw in a different interview where the press are going to ask you the actual questions about the game, and then you've got other people looking for a story. Uh-huh. And it's a lot to burden, I guess, by what you get if you're a.
See, if it was Sean Dyche, he'd be doing the lucky likey game, wouldn't he, Danny?
he'd be doing some jokes, wouldn't he? Yeah, just like with his 40 a day cigarette habit.
Did you see that?
He likes to turn it round on the press.
Yeah,
the looky likes. And he's just like, just bizarre.
I think he's a funny character, Dyche. I think he seems like a good bloke. And I've seen a couple of like bits, I guess, maybe on Football Focus or something where he's got like all the community. It seems like Burnley are a very community-driven club and inclusive and stuff like that. And it seems like he plays a big part in it. Like, it must be good to have a not just a club that's maintained its status in the Premier League for so long, but also seemingly having good people in charge of it. Because we certainly can't say that.
No,
that's unfortunate. And Yeah, it's good because you're going to be there 8 years or whatever he's been there. It's a good thing. Mm-hmm. But he's definitely sarcastic in press conferences, for sure. Yeah. Very sarcastic. He loves his tunes, though, as well. So he's kind of like, some people randomly ask him, like, oh, you've been to a gig? Not recently, obviously, but like, what music are you into? And da-da-da. And he's kind of down to earth, and I think that's what you need, really.
Yeah.
Good, I think.
I don't know about Sunderland.
Should we get onto the Holland game? Because this is where the pressure is completely on, isn't it? Yeah. And I read that Graeme Tiller had been offered this documentary 3 times and he turned it down, and then he eventually sort of accepted it. And he tried to get rid of them halfway through when it was going badly.
Yeah.
But then he smuggled them in for this game.
Yeah.
Yeah. They had to wear like England tracksuits, right?
That's
and they
right,
put
the yeah.
cameras in like holdalls and stuff. And
yeah.
But nobody, nobody other than Graeme Taylor and I guess the England players knew that this was happening. But now you would never be able to get away with that. But nobody, like the journalists didn't know they were being filmed. Where they went around the Europe for the games, nobody knew they were filming this documentary. I mean, it's crazy now because it would be happening live, right? You would be seeing it on social media like as it went every day. Like, it's crazy to think that it could get away with nobody knowing that it was happening. But they ended up because he didn't want people
liking him up as well.
Yeah.
Sorry.
That's all right.
Yeah. You're right. No, I mean,
like,
everybody's
miking him up as well. I think they said that it was kind of like on a whim they were going to try it, and he was like, all right.
Yeah.
So you hear everything.
It's a strange relationship. It's a strange thing that he originally wanted to get rid of them and then he smuggled them in. It's just weird that he did that.
I think it seems like he wanted to show this is what being the England manager is like. It's not that. It's not all bed of roses, but it ended up
showing. It was very real, right?
It ended up showing it that it's so much worse than anybody probably would imagine.
Uh-huh. Oh, definitely. So Danny, did you watch this game? Is this a game that you can remember, the Holland one? Because I can certainly remember it. I remember.
I did watch it. I remember I was staying at my grandma's.
Your grandma's. Yeah, you did watch it.
I just remember Koeman. I remember
Koeman,
the game had everything, like hitting the post, there's free kicks. And obviously, there should have been a red card there.
Definitely, yeah. I mean, that the referee who refereed the game never refereed an international ever after this. He was completely done by FIFA.
They push, like, if you're through on goal, like in any game now, you know, if you're through to red card, you're done. But
that's it,
I think he's probably bottled it. He's too nervous to, like, give that card, ruin the game, but give an advantage to, the opposition or whatever. And remember Koeman and the free kicks, and it was hard to watch.
I think
it was about 12th or something.
Yeah, even the Bergkamp goal, which is the second goal, he controls it with his arm. So it's like every single incident, you know, is a mistake by the referee.
Seaman as well on the free kick.
Seaman's
like,
awful.
Been shot.
Yeah.
It was like, bloody you know, hell, like, been shot. Come on, mate. Like, he's going to flick it. He can because you're already falling over, mate. Like,
that's right.
To the ground. It's a good free kick.
Yeah.
But it's a clever free kick. But what are you doing? You're already kneeling on your knees. Come on.
Yeah. Well, he would later repeat his goalkeeping and exploits forward.
Yeah, he was good at that, wasn't he?
He was good at that. But I think the best bit is obviously the bits where he's talking to the fourth official. And the linesman, he's saying, you know, you've got me the sack here, and you know it, don't you? Those bits are
He says, well, I've got that's got me the sack. Please pass my best on to your colleague.
I mean, yeah, he's a lovely bloke, isn't he? A fantastic guy.
He's like taking the piss, like instead of going, for fuck's sake, you cunts, you fucked up my career. He's gone, well, you've got me the sack, so thank you very much. And he's just like,
mate, pats him on the back. Like, he's doing a sarcastic patting of the fourth official. But even in another documentary, he said that the fourth official after the game said, yes, it was a red card. And he was like, okay, respect then, fair enough.
Uh-huh.
But that doesn't help anything, does it?
Not really.
Definitely not. Definitely doesn't.
Brett was saying in that commentary, that famous commentary, Brian Moore going, he's going to flick it. He's going to flick it. Like,
he's going to flick it.
He knew. And he knew. David Seaman's on his arse. And Brian Moore knew what was going to happen.
Like, David Seaman was thinking about going fishing, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, from Shilton to Seaman, two fucking hapless keepers that get beaten by any dead ball. No wonder Taylor was Chris obsessed Woods. With them.
Chris Woods in between, Chris Woods, yeah.
Tim Flowers, like, I have to mention that because it's Blackburn, isn't it?
Yeah.
So,
ball
jumping over his shoulder.
Yeah.
Oh, that was a good one. That was a good one. But this is an amazing document. Brilliant TV, isn't it?
It is. It's really good.
Never, I mean, you'll never see it again. I don't think.
No, I mean, you would not. After this, it's the original.
Shocking suits, shocking ties, people's haircuts, Y-fronts.
Yeah, like, awful.
Like, on the bench, there's, like, crotch height camera angles. Hey, I don't want to see, like, you know. But,
yeah. It'll never happen
again. It's great. Danny, I think we're going to all get kicked out because we've got 40 minutes because I haven't ever paid for the premium Zoom. So thanks for joining us, mate.
No problem.
Nice to see you again. Man, it's been a long time. We'll do something else in the future.
Hopefully Brett gets some electricity on in the house.
I know, I mean, that fucking little wee willy winky candle that he has going. But, you know, anyway.
Someone downstairs on a bike, just pedaling.
Cheers, Danny. Nice to see you, mate.
Cheers.
Thanks for joining us.
Cheers, mate. To you boys.
Yeah, see you later, too, cheers. Mate.
See you.
See you later, man.
Bye-bye, mate. Right, well, that was good. Danny, nice fella.
Yes, lovely guy.
I don't think we got the most of his technical nous, but...
it was good, though. He had some good points and stuff like that. He's a good guy, Danny.
Yeah, he
Top
is. Yeah, nice to have him on. And now we move on to the quiz section of the podcast, and we welcome the lovely Lisa.
Hello.
Hello. You all right?
Yeah, I'm okay. Are you?
Yes. Thanks for dishing the dirt on your despicable husband last week.
Despicable?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, somebody had to.
Despicable when it comes to matters of the kitchen.
No, he's all right, really. He has his moments. He needs to be called out every now and then.
Don't we all? So I've set up a quiz. It's called Family Fortunes. I think you might have heard of
Families.
Or Tuna Family. So basically, I've got three questions, and you will go head to head on trying to get the best. I think it's the best answer. I have to be honest, I kind of forgot what this was when you asked us to do it.
Yeah.
So we're going to play for Tuna Families between Brett Davidson and the lovely Lisa Davidson. And the first question
is... Do you have a buzzer?
You can take it in turns, I think.
Do you have a buzzer, though?
I don't have a buzzer. If I had, it wouldn't do you any good either, would it? So,
You always need a buzzer.
Question one. The first question, I think you can just shout out ahead of each other. I think that'll be fun. Question one. We asked in a... A survey asked one person what the best monkey or ape is.
Chimp.
Planet the Apes.
Caesar is a good ape. Yeah, a good ape.
You've got the top answer.
Who did? Lisa?
You. No. Chimp.
What did you say?
Chimp.
Oh.
You said
my answer was better.
Your answer was much better.
It was, but it doesn't fit the bill for what I was.
Who did you ask this question to? Because if you had asked me in the survey, I would have said Planet of the Apes.
What the best monkey is? The answer can't be Planet of the Apes. Yeah, I said I asked one person.
Yeah, I'd ask you to go around the streets of Dubai and ask the resident.
I asked one person, and the top answer was actually Young Chimp, but I'll give you it.
Young Chimp. Yeah. Did this Young Chimp have any clothes on?
No, obviously not. Not at all. Maybe a nappy. He's only young, so he doesn't need them yet. So, Brett, you got the top answer. Would you like to play on, or would you like to pass it over?
I think I'd like to pass it over to my lovely wife.
Okay, I've only got three answers in each of these. So, Lisa, you've got number two and three to get.
Okay.
What
Did you ask Jane? Is that what you're saying?
No, I asked myself.
You asked Jane.
Is it all about monkeys?
No, we're still on question one. This one's all about monkeys.
Oh, okay.
What is the best monkey or ape? And the number one is a young chimp. You're looking for what might be number two or number three?
A gorilla.
Ching. yes. A big gorilla is number three.
A big gorilla?
Yep. So you've got...
Why are you asking questions just about monkeys?
Is it number three? Because it's the top three answers of the monkeys is the first question.
I know, but have you ever seen Family Fortune?
I don't think you have.
That's how it goes.
It's not the usual format, but...
it is.
Like if you need the answer.
Is this exactly the format?
It's not like... What you do is you ask... You've got five questions, you say... Name something that is furry and brown. You ask five questions like that.
Brett and Lisa.
Someone is taken to a bush. Someone's isolated in a bush.
You're talking about the final round of Family Fortunes. This is the beginning.
Okay, I expected we were in the family.
Do you want number three, monkey?
You need number two. But Lisa, would you like to guess it yourself or would you like to pass it over to your husband?
Well, I'll guess.
Okay.
What, you don't?
I think that's a bad choice.
Why? I've got gorilla.
Okay, go on then.
Orangutan.
No.
Orange?
the orangutan was, I think...
The orangutan.
The orange. I think it was probably fourth. So you're out. Brett, would you like to have a hazard a guess?
I would like to hazard a guess. Baboon.
No, fifth. It's
macaque.
You lying. Yet.
It's the bonobo ones.
Nobody has said that.
With the nose on them.
They're the ones that like to have oral sex with each other for pleasure.
And that's why you've picked it.
The survey picked it, not just me.
Monkey pervs.
Your survey would never say that, and Les Dennis would never include monkeys having oral sex.
Maybe that's why Les Dennis isn't on the telly anymore. Right. Question two. We asked one person what the best flavor soup is. What's your answers?
Tomato.
It's there, but it's not the top answer. See, I do know how it goes. Lisa?
Vegetable.
You've got it in one. The best flavor is vegetable. Brett, your answer was number two. Now, Lisa, you've got a choice. Do you want to guess number three? I've put four in this list, actually.
I'm going to pass.
Okay, Brett.
I'm going to say minestrone.
No.
I want my turn back.
You can have your turn back, yes.
I need to unpass. Pea and ham.
Didn't even enter my mind.
Mulligatawny?
No, that's awful. Nobody knows what that is. What is it?
Oxtail.
Fucking hell, there's definitely better ones than this, isn't there?
No.
That's soup.
Maybe.
They're the only types of soup.
I've put carrot.
You don't leak?
Carrot lentil. Was the answer.
Ooh, lentil.
No, in carrot. Fact, all there's all of these flavors that I didn't even think about. So, carrot number three.
Carrot?
What is?
I don't know who you've been asking.
I put carrot slash pumpkin.
Pumpkin soup. This is more like a delve into the mind, into your mind.
Well, the fourth thing on this list says mushroom is the worst. The third and final question. Who was the best CBBC broom cupboard man?
Philip Schofield.
Correct, the top answer. Well done, Lisa.
Everybody loves the grey fox.
Mm-hmm. Not, he was brown haired then, but I suspect it was dyed. I think he was premature grey.
He was under a lot of stress.
Maybe.
He was, well, he was hiding. He's
I'm trying to think of it. CBBC presents now.
Lisa, would you like to, considering it sounds like he doesn't know them, would you like to take this or pass it on?
Gordon the gopher.
Not a man,
he
the gopher.
He didn't present it. He was just
co-presenter at best.
I'm going to say that I don't know.
Dr. Range.
Who's Dr. Range?
Don't know what that is.
What you've been watching?
CBBC in the cupboard.
What about who was that woman?
It's man. The question is, what's the best man?
Man.
Man.
It's got to be a man.
Who is the best broom covered man?
I only know Philip Schofield.
Pass.
Pat Sharp?
Yeah, idiot. Would you like us to reveal the answers?
Go on then. That was rubbish.
Third is the warlock Andy Peters.
Oh, yeah. I remember Andy Peters. Yeah.
No.
He's a very strange man, him, isn't
That's
he?
That's why he's third.
He's good for a competition.
That's all he does. Competitions on this morning, doesn't he?
He's bulked right out.
Has he? Beefed up?
He's massive.
It's probably all the competition. He wears
these T-shirts with really short sleeves that show off his arms a lot.
Was he with the duck?
He was with Ed the Duck, yeah.
Ed the Duck, yeah.
And who's Roland Rat?
Roland Rat's not a man and not ever in the broom cupboard. Number
it's
two.
Called Roland. He's obviously a boy.
He's a male rat, but I don't class that as a man.
He's had an encounter with the ooze, hasn't he?
He has had the ooze, yeah. Reference. Number two was the blonde presenter Andy Crane. You must remember that man.
I remember. I had his image in my mind.
I think he was with the duck as well.
Was he? I couldn't remember his name. So, yeah.
Don't know him.
Anyway, the final.
I think we can agree that was an entirely successful quiz and everybody really enjoyed it. That's it, yep.
Well done.
Hold on. I was expecting to go through to some kind of final.
I forgot that about one. The final bit.
There's no final.
We're all winners. We didn't make it like England in the 1992-1994 qualifiers.
Well, I'm going to storm off.
Okay.
Thanks very much. Goodbye.
Thanks, Lisa. Enjoy your vat of wine. Bye.
Vat. He's just said you had a vat of wine.
It's just a little glass.
It's just a little glass.
I know, I'm joking. I'm definitely pissed and I'm she's very... not. So...
I was very disappointed that you didn't read me mind and get what I actually wanted you to
do. I forgot about the final round, to be honest. I think you're... now reading your message back, I was confused about how you had laid out your request. Now I get what it meant.
But still, enjoyable all the same.
Okay, well, that's good. And we can all agree that the young chimp is the best monkey or ape.
The young chimp.
Yeah, well, the young ones are obviously better, aren't they?
Just any chimp with clothes on is good, I think. They're better than young chimps. So if you've got a chimpanzee, I don't know if I'd...
I don't know if I condone it as much as I would like to.
You do. You've condoned it in other podcasts. You said
I know, I'm trying
you,
to,
you
be
wanted one to be dressed as a butler.
That wouldn't be a chimp. That would be a macaque.
That's not what you said before. You said that you wanted a little tiny chimp in heaven dressed as a butler.
In heaven, though.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's all right.
No animal cruelty in heaven. Right. So that was a quiz. I think didn't work, but never mind. And nice to see Lisa, of course.
Did it never work?
Yeah, I think that's a pattern. We've got some really nice music, haven't we? So before we go, let's say... bye to everyone. Thank you for listening. Thanks to Danny for coming on. Really enjoyed it. Nice to see you, mate. Yes. It's been a long time. And I'm sure we'll do it again. And thanks for listening, everyone. Follow us at FCircusPod on Twitter, where there's a bit of banter around that. You can join the Facebook group, which is the name of the podcast. And please do like and subscribe and comment and rate and all of that kind of stuff wherever you listen to our podcast. And we will see you next week. Brett, any final words?
Yeah.
No, you're not dying, I hope. I mean, just for the podcast.
Are you sure? Are you, that, yeah, is that
I can't
sentence?
Be sure, but...
The final words are that I'm missing Sunderland against Lincoln for this nonsense.
I know. Well, we've played two midfielders in the back four, so I think you.
Oh, well, that's nice.
Luke O'Nien at centre half.
Brilliant.
So
we're going to win. We're going to win.
We're going to win against the top of the league, Lincoln. So, yep. Thanks for listening, everyone. This is music from New York singer-songwriter who's a bit folky, but this new song, a bit more dream pop, I quite like it. Gracie Martin, and the song is Dreams Die. It's very good. Mm-hmm. Very much like it. I'm very pleased we've got this on. So,
it's very good.
Until next week, and more nonsense. Have a great week, everyone. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Goodbye.
Okay, goodbye.
Goodbye.
Waiting for the train in my sleep, and I don't know where it's going. No one's got the plans, nobody holding my hand. Though I know that I'm alone now, and they don't really warn you that all your dreams die. Cut you a tape it to the wall like I was 13. Writing the fanfic, making it perfect. Waking up for school just to go back to sleep. I was 30.